This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Concord, New Hampshire. Sharon Angle waters the Tree of Liberty on the radio. Alvin Green claims a word-of-mouth mandate on cable TV. Carly Fiorina's gaffe in the green room. It's Wednesday and time for a...
So yesterday.
...edition of the Political Junkie.
I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us for a look at the week in politics. We're in Concord today to focus on the New Hampshire primary. No, not that primary. We'll talk with Republicans who hope to replace Judd Gregg in the United States Senate. Plus, the pundits pan the president's oil speech. A congressman grabs a conservative activist on video. Meg Whitman shoves into the news in California. Harry Reid hits the air in Nevada. And Sarah Palin answers the most embarrassing political question on camera since boxers are briefs. Political junkie Ken Rudin's with us today at the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio here in Concord. As usual, we begin with a trivia question, Ken.
Hi, Neil. And first of all, let me thank the folks at New Hampshire Public Radio. As always, they have been delightful to us. And how come you don't have that nice woman reading the trivia question you had last week?
Well, I guess she couldn't make it.
Okay, well, thank you for doing that. Anyway, BP, you may not know this, Neil. BP has been in the news lately.
No.
Yes, there was a spill in the Gulf. So here's a BP related trivia question. Name the last people elected senator and governor with the initials BP. You need to name them both.
And they will be the last ever.
That's right.
So if you think you know the answer to our trivia question, the last people to be elected senator and governor who have the initials BP, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And, of course, the winner gets a fabulous no-prize T-shirt in exchange for the promise of taking a digital picture of themselves so we can post it on the Wall of Shame. So, Ken, let's talk about one of the most extraordinary developments is the number of people who either capture themselves in saying something ridiculous on radio or television or are captured by others doing the same thing. And we have to begin with a congressman, little-known Democrat Bob Etheridge, who got involved with a number of people on the street. These were a couple of kids came up to him and confronted the congressman, and this was the exchange that followed.
Who are you?
Please let go, my
sir.
Who are you?
Sir, please.
Congressman,
sir.
Please let go, me.
Who are you? Well, that's still a good question. We don't exactly know who they are, but the congressman has apologized.
Yeah, I thought the question was to Admiral Stockdale. Who am I? What am I doing here? Look, first of all, regarding your opening statement saying that people should know better to say anything, things embarrassing on radio, well, you can exclude us immediately. But
here's
what happened. Bob Etheridge, who in North Carolina is pretty well known, actually, he was the guy the Democrats wanted to run for the Senate this year against Richard Burr. He's walking down the street on Capitol Hill, and two guys, you know, approach him with a camera saying, Congressman, how are you? Well, what do you think? Do you fully support the Obama agenda? And it seems like, again, this could be an edited video. We don't know for sure. But Etheridge seems to go berserk, as they say, they wrote out in the video. He grabs one of the cameramen by the wrist, later by the neck, and say, who are you? Who are you? What are you doing here? Who are you? And ultimately, the guys say, we're just students and we're doing a project. Now, you know, you said they're conservative activists. We don't know that from the video that they're conservative activists.
Well, it came out through a website, though, that was associated with the Acorn stunt a couple of years ago.
Yes, that's on their website. But as far as we know, we just see these two guys interviewing Etheridge. And Etheridge just goes absolutely ballistic and really gets very physical. And finally, he lets go. But it was a very embarrassing moment. Look, Michael Moore pulls these stunts all the time. And you don't see anybody slugging Michael Moore, though there's probably a lot of people who would like to slug Michael Moore. But anyway, Etheridge gave a complete apology. And he said, look, you know, I had a tough day. And, after all these years in politics, it's not something I would react the kind of way I would react.
Meanwhile, in the green room, apparently not understanding that the camera and the microphone were on Carly Fiorina, who's, of course, running against Barbara Boxer. She's the Republican candidate, Boxer, the incumbent Democratic senator in California. And, describing her November rival to everybody.
Lauda saw Barbara Boxer briefly on television this morning and said what everyone says, God, what is that hair? So yesterday,
Well, her campaign is not quite so yesterday, but this doesn't help.
That's right. She may no longer be the heir apparent in California.
Oh.
But here's the thing, though. You know, we celebrated, or many people celebrated, the June 8th primaries as a great day for female candidates. Women were winning in California and Nevada and Iowa and Maine and perhaps in South Carolina. And to have anybody criticizing a woman's hair, don't do that in politics. And to have a woman doing it, it just brings up the old, unfortunate, and perhaps incorrect stereotypes, but stereotypes nonetheless, of a cattiness. Now, of course, if a man said it, it would be, you know, sexist. So either way, you lose. But Fiorina should know better. And again, you should always know better what to say, you know, with an open microphone.
And it suggestions of mean girls and all of that sort of stuff. And this is going to her running mate, the candidate for governor, it turns out, settled a court case some years ago that involved shoving.
Well, that's right. When Meg, you know, we talk about these women who have great business backgrounds, Colley Fiorina with Hewlett-Packard, Meg Whitman with eBay. There was a case a while ago where Meg Whitman apparently shoved an employee, and there was an out-of-court settlement. But again, not a great day for Republican women or Republican candidates in California.
All right. Let's see if we can get some callers on the line who think they know the answers to this week's trivia question. Again, the last senator and the last member of a governor to be elected who have the initials BP. And let's see if we can go next to Stephen. And Stephen's with us from Newport, Rhode Island.
Yes, hi. I'm thinking, all I have is the governor. North Carolina, Bev Perdue.
That's correct. That is the last governor with those initials.
But you have to get both. You have to get the governor and the senator.
Sorry about that. Well, did my best.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's see if we have a slightly different phone system here. Hey, that worked pretty well. Let's go next to Steve. Steve's with us from San Francisco.
I'm going to go with Bob Packwood.
Bob Packwood, boy, how does that grab you? Oh, sorry. That Bob Packwood is the correct answer. Senator from Oregon won his last term in 1992, so it's Bob Packwood, senator.
Ding, 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 ding. You are the winner. Absolutely. So, Steve, we're going to put you on hold and get your information, so we're going to be able to get you a no-prize T-shirt in exchange for that promise of sending us a digital picture of yourself. I thought the answer was Barack Obama.
Well, I was going to say, BP also stands for Beautiful Prize.
Beautiful
That's
Prize.
Right. Yes.
How about that?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, let's see if I can figure out how to put you on hold. I think I can do that. And, I see somebody in Washington picked up the phone, I hope. If not, call back. We'll get it to you somehow. Somebody claiming to be Bob. Anyway, let's see if we can continue with the potpourri here. And this is an astonishing moment. The issue all along this year in Nevada was thought to be the incumbent, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader. And he was thought to be in big trouble, and whoever was going to be running against him as a Republican, well, Harry Reid was going to be the issue. Maybe that's not the case any longer. This is the now Republican candidate, former Assemblywoman Sharon Angle, speaking to Lars Larson, a radio talk show host in Portland, Oregon, in January.
You know, our founding fathers, they put that Second Amendment in there for a good reason, and that was for the people to protect themselves against a tyrannical government. In fact, you know, Thomas Jefferson said it's good for a country to have a revolution every 20 years. I hope that's not where we're going, but, you know, if this Congress keeps going the way it is, people are really looking toward those remedies. They're saying, my goodness, what can we do to turn this country around? And I'll tell you, the first thing we need to do is take Harry Reid out.
And Second Amendment remedies and take Harry Reid out. Even the most charitable reading of those comments is going to make Sharon Angle the story in this race and her affiliations and her beliefs, as opposed to whatever it is that Harry Reid has done in the past in the U.S. Senate.
Well, we still can't count the Republicans out. There is still a deep dislike for Harry Reid in Nevada. But having said that, that is a very incendiary quote by Sharon Angle. And not to compare what Rand Paul has said in Kentucky, but this is the problem with first-time candidates, and also you can compare that to the Fiorina in California as well, that they should know better, but they do have a tendency to say impolitic things. And when you have this angry conservative Tea Party group feelings out there, sometimes the incorrect things would be said. And to say Second Amendment rights and to take Harry Reid out in the same sentence, whatever she meant, and of course she meant we want to defeat him in November. I'm maybe giving him more credit.
Second Amendment remedies.
Yeah, hey. Exactly. And it just – so it's just – once again, the Republicans thought they had a very interesting nominee. They do have an interesting nominee, but it may not be a successful one.
Well, speaking of first-time candidates, the Democrat who won the U.S. Senate nomination to run against Jim DeMint in South Carolina, this is Alvin Green – a man who ran a campaign so lightly he did not have so much as a lawn sign put up anywhere in the state. And he was on the Keith Olbermann MSNBC show and told him that his victory was no fluke.
I think that, you know, I think they heard of my name when I was campaigning across the state, you know, just to pass the word on, just by word of mouth. But I just got the word around, you know. It was not luck. I had 60% of the vote.
Ken, you give me a hard time, sir, because I love to use the word tantamount. Would you accept that Jim DeMint is now tantamount, that he's going to be elected?
Well, I would have said that from the beginning. I have a feeling there are a lot of Democrats in South Carolina would wish that Alvin Green would take a stroll down the Appalachian Trail. But look, Alvin Green, not only did he had no campaign staff, he had no money, he didn't even have campaign buttons, okay?
Okay.
I know.
There's the big sin.
There you go. And anyway, he won 60% of the vote against Vic Rawl, who was the establishment choice, although very few people have heard of Vic Rawl either. But I mean, and Alvin Green just, you know, the scary part is that back in November, Alvin Green was arrested for apparently showing a college student pornographic materials. He didn't have enough money to hire a lawyer, so they got a lawyer for him, and yet he managed to spend $10,400 to file for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate to get on the ballot. It just doesn't make sense why somebody with no money could do that and no questions be asked.
It's Wednesday. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us. When we come back, we're going to focus on New Hampshire, as indeed we are for the rest of the hour. But we're going to focus specifically on the Republican race for the U.S. Senate nomination. So if you're a Republican in New Hampshire, you're going to vote in that primary, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Concord, New Hampshire. Today with us is NPR political junkie Ken Rudin. If you're not getting enough of him on this program, you can go to our website at npr.org where you can read his blog and download his podcast and, of course, solve the scuttle button puzzle. It's a special road trip edition of the Political Junkie. We're in Concord, New Hampshire today, trying hard to hide our Yankee hats. And when you think New Hampshire, you think primary. Right now, we're going to focus on the Senate, where Congressman Paul W. Hodes is unchallenged on the Democratic side. He hopes that we will still nickname this state Blue Hampshire after November, but there are five Republicans who hope to change that. We're going to speak with three of them today, and we want to hear from the New Hampshire Republicans. Tell us how the primary race is shaping up where you are. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. First up, Ovid Lamontagne is here in the studio. He's a New Hampshire attorney running in the Republican primary for Senate. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's great to be with you today.
And can you tell us what distinguishes you from your rivals in the Republican race?
Other than the fact that I have the most challenging name in politics, we can start with that.
Oh, come on. Everybody knows. Probably pronounces it Ovid for the Roman poet.
And there we go. It is Ovid Lamontagne. And I'm the authentic conservative in the race here in New Hampshire. There's a lot of good fighting people running for United States Senate on the Republican side. But I'm the only one with a track record who's actually run for office before, served in the Republican Party, led the conservative movement on a number of fronts over the last 20 years. And I don't have to go to Washington to figure out where I stand. I know where I stand now, and I've run before. I've organized grassroots campaigns, and we're going to have a team that's going to help us win not only in the primary but in the general election, and then serve the people of New Hampshire when I actually go to Washington, only to be there, by the way, during the session and coming back home and living really at home here in New Hampshire as much as possible. Possible to avoid getting caught up in the trappings and the culture of Washington.
The culture of Washington a lot of people are running against the culture of Washington. You're hoping to at least spend a considerable amount of your time in the capital city, though.
Absolutely.
When you say you're the true conservative in the race, what's the marker we should measure by?
Well, a number of things. First of all, the track record I have. As a candidate for office, I think it's important that people are able to look at what you've done and who you, and to confirm that what you say is who you, what you believe and who you are. I've been a party platform chairman back in 2004, vice chairman in 2002. The party platform is what I stand on. I'm an independent person. I'm not the party establishment candidate. You'll probably have Kelly Ayotte on. She's been supported by the National Republican Senatorial Committee and recruited by them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the establishment candidate this time out. I've never been. But I'm not independently wealthy either. I believe in the old-fashioned values of New Hampshire politics, which is grassroots and people helping people to get the word out. We'll have enough money to go up on television and radio. But in the meantime, we're going to do the right thing in terms of organizing the people. I stand on the three legs of the stool of the conservative movement: social, economic, and national security conservatism. I think we need to reverse course 180 degrees in Washington. I believe, as a former chairman of the State Board of Education here in New Hampshire, unlike the other candidates, that we need to repeal No Child Left Behind. Dissolve the U.S. Department of Education and fully fund the federal commitment under special education, but allow the states and the local communities to continue to design, free them up actually to continue to design and operate elementary and secondary education in our country. I think doing that is going to put us closer to a path of solvency, free up the marketplace in other ways, and make sure government focuses on what the Constitution provides.
Ken?
When I grew up following politics, New Hampshire was always seen as a Republican state. You had the Manchester Union leader, you had Senator Norris Cotton, Mel Thompson, all those guys. In 2006, New Hampshire seemed to make a dramatic turn, at least if not to the left, towards the Democrats. John Lynch, biggest landslide and for any governor. You had both houses of the state legislature going Democratic for the first time since 1874. If New Hampshire is indeed going more to the Democratic side, and I want to see if that's correct, mm-hmm. Why would they elect somebody who's an unabashed conservative?
Well, this election cycle, I think, Ken, is going to be on very core fundamental issues. The question for voters in New Hampshire, like around the country, is going to be, do you want to continue to have more government control out of Washington, a more of a socialist agenda being implemented, and I say that quite sincerely, or do you want to restore the decision-making for domestic issues at the state and local level and free us from the grip of Washington and the incredible debt we're building? It's going to be on fundamental issues that we're going to be able to distinguish my campaign from Paul Hoad's. And I think the people in New Hampshire are going to reject the big government approach, the liberal approach that Paul brings. I mean, he was opposed to the House version of health care because it didn't fund abortions. It didn't have a public option or a single-payer system. He is a big-time, big-government liberal, and we will be able to I'll be the starkest contrast to him giving the voters of New Hampshire the clearest choice.
Want to hear from some New Hampshire Republicans or people voting in the Republican primary today? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Alice is on the line from here in Concord.
I'm in Bow, actually.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay, right next door.
Okay.
Hi, Alice.
I am a Democrat, but I plan on changing my affiliation to Republican. And okay. For a strategic reason, I'm planning to vote for John Stevens. And
for
hopefully,
governor.
So Kelly Ayotte does not win, because I think she probably is the front runner for the Republicans, and I would not like to see her beat out Paul Hoad.
And so who will you vote for on the Senate side of that primary?
For Paul Hoad, I will switch back.
You'll switch back to vote for Paul Hoad's when that's in November. But in this primary, who are you going to vote for if you're registered as a Republican?
John Stevens.
John Stevens. He's running for governor, though.
Right. He's running for governor. Oh, well, Alice, I hope I can earn your support.
even if temporarily.
Anybody other than Kelly Ayotte?
Anybody other than Kelly Ayotte? Well, you would qualify then, sir.
I would qualify. Okay. But that's a start.
All right.
Let's continue the conversation, Alice. Ovid2010.com is our website.
Okay.
Thanks very much for the call. Name recognition, always a big issue.
Yes. And in my case, it's name pronunciation as well. You know, that is one of those hurdles you take on when you run. In our case, name recognition is going to continue to be an issue because I haven't run for office in 14 years. But I think over time, people are going to come back to saying, you know, we know Ovid, we can count on where he stands. We may not agree on all the issues, but on the core issues, we know he'll be where he'll be, and it'll be generally where we want him to be.
Ovid Lamontagne, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here. I'm looking forward to the next time we have a chance to chat.
Ovid Lamontagne, a Republican candidate for Senate here in New Hampshire. Joining us now, Bill Binney, also running in the New Hampshire primary here for the United States Senate nomination, a New Hampshire businessman. He's with us on the phone. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
And we're going to start with the same question to you. What distinguishes you from your rivals in the Republican field?
Well, I'm the only candidate in the field who's created thousands of jobs. I've spent my life in business. I've been a New York Stock Exchange CEO by the time I was 32. I come from humble roots. My dad was a janitor. My mom was a maid. I worked my way through college getting on a scholarship, working nights as a mechanic. In fact, I'm proud to say I have absolutely the best Snap-on toolbox in the state of New Hampshire. I'm a business guy. I got involved in this race because I think our country's going broke. Our company in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, on the seacoast, ran a very simple ad. We should have had 10 or 15 applications about a year ago. We were absolutely overwhelmed. We got hundreds and hundreds of applications, over 350 applications for one job a year ago when we should have had a fraction of that. And when I looked at the other candidates and I looked at, frankly, my own life's journey of having built businesses, having hired and created companies, and having done billions of dollars worth of transactions because of my background in business, I understand the problems of small businesses as well as large businesses. And I spent 6 months of my life working in China, 3 years in Europe. I've worked in Latin America, South America, as well as lived on the seacoast of New Hampshire with my wife and four kids for over 20 years. I think what people in New Hampshire need and want now more than ever are not ideologues, but they want serious, practical human beings that will fix the problems that our country faces and the citizens of New Hampshire face. And that's really what my focus is, to get people back to work and to address this extraordinary economic anxiety that I think we see all around our state and all around the country. You know, we all have friends and neighbors who are looking for work.
Bill Binney, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we talked to Ovid Lamontagne about name recognition. He admitted, he hadn't run in 14 years. It's a problem for him. You are a political unknown, a businessman in the state, though introducing yourself with a large number of television ads.
Right. I think you'll find in the state that my name ID is as good as anyone's running in the race or very close to it. I do expect, by the way, that by the time September rolls around, that many of the candidates will have significant name ID so the voters will be able to make a choice. And the voters are going to have a real choice between business-as-usual folks or politicians, people who have been in public life, or in practical, common-sense business people who just want to go to office, change things, fix things, and make them work for ordinary folks. And that's how I would classify myself in that latter group.
Ken?
Mr. Binney, there's some criticism of the National Republican Party in many states, including New Hampshire, that they seem to have rallied behind an establishment figure, in this case, Attorney General Kelly Ayotte, or former Attorney General Kelly Ayotte, before the primary field was established. What do you say to the Republicans in Washington and perhaps around the country when they pick a front runner before the voters have had a say in the race?
There's an element of truth in that. I'll tell you my own personal experience. I'm pretty well known on the seacoast of New Hampshire. There are not many New York Stock Exchange CEOs around or people that have built businesses. When I was thinking of running, I was in the front pages of the largest papers in the state, the Union Leader and others. I called down to Washington to introduce myself and say that I was considering running, and it took them 3 months to call me back. Months when I called the National Republican Senatorial Committee. They certainly know who I am now. I mean, the Union Leader has called me a dual front runner. I'm up in the polls. I'm certainly in this hunt. I'm certainly working hard. I'm traveling around the state. I'm shaking a lot of hands and meeting a lot of people. And they know who I am now. It's a very different conversation.
One last question, and I don't mean to be too flip, but you'd think that two things would be unpopular in this particular place and in this particular time in this country's history would be New York and stock exchange.
Well, I think that there's nothing wrong. I'm very proud of the fact that I've built a business. I'm very proud of the fact that my head has been engaged in building businesses. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that what we need now are jobs and economic growth. And, you know, it's been my life's journey, as I said earlier, to have built a business. I'm very proud of it. I built it from scratch. You know, nobody gave it to me. Okay. I'm part of the American dream, and I want to make sure that every person in New Hampshire, every kid, has the same shot at it that I did. And the concept that it's bad to have built a business, I don't buy it. And I don't think the people in New Hampshire buy it at all.
Bill Binney, thanks for your time today. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. You take care.
Bill Binney, a Republican candidate for Senate here in New Hampshire, joins us today on the phone. And you're listening to Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now joining us is Kelly Ayotte, former Attorney General of New Hampshire, also running for the Republican primary for Senate, as we mentioned a couple of times, the front runner, or at least perceived to be in this race. Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's great to be here with you today, and I'm going to tell you something my grandmother told me. Actually, my last name's Ayotte. It's a boat, not a yacht. It's a yacht, not a boat, isn't it?
It's a yacht. I apologize for mispronouncing it.
Oh, no problem. Something my grandmother always told me, but it's great to be here with you today. Thank you for having me.
Can I just say something? Neil got La Montaigne right, but he didn't get Ayotte right.
Montaigne is something we learn how to pronounce, yeah.
La Montaigne is usually harder, but it's great to be here with you.
Well, Kelly Ayotte, is it fair to say you're the establishment candidate in this race?
No, that's actually not at all. I've never run for political office before, so, you know, I'm someone who really has training and background as a prosecutor, not a politician. This is my first run for office, and if you look at someone like Ovid, he's run a couple of times before. I've been really working in a different sector as the attorney general. I was an appointed attorney general in New Hampshire. I was the first woman appointed to that position, and I have a different profile, too, having been first appointed by a Republican governor and reappointed twice by our Democratic governor.
And you do have the blessings, though, of what's seen as the Republican Party establishment in this state.
Well, I have support from people here in New Hampshire, which is what matters, and all of our elected sheriffs and a whole host of law enforcement and a majority of our—we have 400 state reps in our state, so we believe in democracy, and over 100 of them have endorsed me, and over 2,400 New Hampshire donors. So that's what matters, and I'm working hard here in New Hampshire to build support and going to events and meeting people.
All right, let's get a caller in on the line. This is Danny. Danny calling us from Nashua.
Hello.
Hi, Danny.
How are you?
I'm well today. Thanks.
I just have a question for your first person, La Montaigne. I heard him, once again, like you hear most real conservatives bring up the boogeyman of socialism and how this administration is pushing socialism. I would just like to ask him how you could explain how a corporate-run government bailing out giant businesses and cutting schools is socialism. I am a socialist. Barack Obama is not.
In any case, he has left us, but we're going to have to go with the guest we've got, and that's Kelly Ayotte.
Ayotte.
Fine. I'll answer to anything. How's that?
Okay. Kelly Anything is with us on the phone. And you, as you mentioned, you've served in Democratic under Democratic governors as well as Republican governors.
Yes.
Is this era of partisanship something that you're going to be looking to follow up on if you go ahead and run in the fall against Paul Hodes?
Well, you know, I think what people want is for us to put ideas first and to get results and leadership and to solve the great challenges we face right now as a country, and that's what it comes down to. And, you know, we've got some huge challenges when it comes to our $13 trillion debt and where that's going to put us long term. I have a mother of two children, and I'm very concerned about where we're going. We're not on a fiscally sustainable path, and that's why I decided to run for the Senate. We're also, you know, my family, we're a small business family. My husband has a landscaping and snow plowing business, so I very much have seen, you know, the impact also of things that can happen in Washington and how it can impact small businesses.
Ken?
Mr. LaMontagne before said that he's the true conservative in the race. Do you find, and we've seen this with Republican candidates in other states, that conservative opponents pull people like you further to the right and then have to get back to the center for November? Do you have that fear?
No, I don't, because the positions that I'm running on, I'm a common-sense conservative. And I'm running on the issues of cutting spending to make sure we have a government that has a balanced budget to get and control our $13 trillion debt, and also to get our economy back on track. And I think the way to do that is through pro-growth, lower taxes, policies that really put people to work. And so those
Kelly
are the issues.
I'm afraid we've run out of time, but thank you very much and good luck to you in the primary.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Former Attorney General Kelly Ayotte running for the Republican primary nomination for U.S. Senate. More with political junkie Ken Rudin and more on the Granite State. We're going to broaden our focus a little bit and talk about the other primaries and look ahead to November. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cohn in Concord, New Hampshire. Here are headlines from some stories we're following today at NPR News. BP today tentatively agreed to put $20 billion in an escrow fund to compensate victims of the Gulf Coast oil spill. White House officials announced the decision as President Obama met today for the first time with executives of the company. The fund will be independently administered by Kenneth Feinberg, who oversaw payments to families of the September 11th disaster. And closing arguments begin today in a landmark federal trial on the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8. That's the voter-approved measure that effectively bans gay marriage in the state. The judge could hand down his decision in a matter of weeks. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered. Here in New Hampshire, just about everybody waits to see if the state will continue the strong blue trend of the last two election cycles and what will happen in the other statewide races. Joining us now is New Hampshire Public Radio's Josh Rogers. Also here in the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord, Arnie Arneson, a regular on WGBH's Callie Crossley show. And we want to hear now from New Hampshire listeners in our audience. How do the primaries shape up and how does it look ahead for November? 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Of course, political junkie Ken Rudin is still with us. Josh, why don't we turn to you? And we were talking with the Republican Senate candidates, or three of them anyway. There are five in the race. We invited the others. They didn't get back to us. But in any case, is Kelly Ayotte, I'm getting it right this time, is she still the front runner here?
I think it's tightened. I think Bill Binney, the polls indicate that it's tightening, that all of them, all of the leading candidates stand a good chance in the fall should they, you know, whoever emerges from the primary. You'd have to say she's the front runner, but you know the polls at this point are hard to tell. Bill Binney spent a lot of money on ads. He's been out there. It seems he's having a good time on the campaign trail. Kelly Ayotte can be a bit wooden. Over LaMontagne is, you know, kind of toiling in the, you know, conservative vineyards and says he's the man who, you know, real Republicans will trust when they have to make their decision. And, you know, we'll see. It's pretty wide open. All of them look like they stand a good chance in the fall against Paul Hodes.
Yeah, so, the polls I've seen shows that any of them would have, at least in the case of Binney and Ayotte, a double-digit lead over Paul Hodes.
That's what they show at this point. You know, Hodes would have you believe that once he gets out there and starts, you know, making his pitch that, you know, it's time to complete the work of the president and once people... you know, he was early getting out in favor of health care and said that he wanted to make, you know, that he was willing to run on that, you know, despite a lot of criticism of that. Lately, he's been hammering on offshore oil. I mean, he's looking for issues on which he has purchase. There's been also a you know, some criticism of Kelly Ayotte from both Hodes and from a couple of her GOP rivals on a Ponzi scheme that was failed to be detected by state banking securities regulators and the Attorney General's office when she was at the helm. She testified last week in legislative hearings on that matter. It'll be interesting to see how that issue plays out, but it's pretty wide open.
And Arnie Arneson, broadly, this was a Democratic stronghold the last two times around. Is it turning red?
Well, I think stronghold is the wrong word. Maybe we should call ourselves the home of the undeclared. And the reason I say this is I went to the Secretary of State's office just before coming here, and just to let you know, we have 267,725 Democrats, 266,777 Republicans, and a whopping, are we sitting down, 328,220,000 undeclareds. And that number keeps growing and growing and growing. And that really, I think, is more of a statement about the fact that this is a state that is not going to be reliably blue or reliably red. Mm-hmm. So don't make those assumptions. And I think that's one of the reasons why Mr. Binney is looking at the state saying, well, Gordon Humphrey bought his seat, Benson bought his, Governor Lynch bought his. Well, this is an opportunity for me to use my cash in this senatorial campaign.
But expanding on what Neil just said, I mean, we saw in 2006 record-breaking numbers and wins for the Democrats. Is there an ideological sea change in New Hampshire in the intervening 4 years?
Is there an how do I say this? I think
don't
Josh.
Be afraid. Don't
No. I'm not sure there is an ideological sea change. What I do know is that Republicans have the perfect storm. I hate to use that hackneyed expression, but they have a fragile economy. They have Democrats in charge everywhere, and they have Papa Sununu. And what do I mean by that is that Governor Sununu, the former chief of staff of Bush 1, is a pit bull, and he is like the energy bunny. And so what you have
he's
is
Republican state
he's
chairman.
Republican state chairman. And so he has enthusiasm. He has opportunity. He has a real conflict within the Republican Party for the voice, but that's going to get people attention. And people are not wedded to Democrats. They were wedded to change.
Mm.
And that's the difference. And now the question is, does change mean Democrat or does change mean the Republican du jour?
And let me get back to Josh and Josh Rogers. There's an incumbent Democrat running again for governor.
Yes. Well, John Lynch, he's in a slightly different position than he was the last two go-rounds where he was running against, you know, very marginal candidates and candidates of such a weakness that a lot of prominent Republicans refused to endorse them. And those two elections, he, you know, racked up record-breaking wins, 30-plus point victories. And, you know, his coattails were long and swept a lot of Democrats into the state legislature. You know, the Democrats have been in charge. There's been infighting. There have been, you know, budget difficulties, as there have been across the country. There have been some ethical issues within his administration. And, you know, he may be seeming a bit shop-worn. I mean, his poll numbers are still pretty high. And the likely Republican candidate running against him is, you know, an experienced candidate, not a successful one. He's lost twice in GOP primaries for the first congressional district. John Stephen, he was a Health and Human Services commissioner. He at least knows government and can make the argument. And with Chairman Sununu as a backstop, the notion that John Lynch can just kind of roll ahead unscathed and free of criticism, that's just not the reality.
And there's something important to remember. New Hampshire is a relatively unique state. Vermont and New Hampshire are the only two states left in the nation that still elect governors every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got John Lynch, who's looking for his fourth term, but that only means he's been here for 6 years. But like everyone else knows, you know, you keep shoving stuff under the rug. By the time you get to that third election, stuff is coming out the other side of the rug. So I think John Lynch does have some problems, but I don't think the Republican candidate for governor, any one of them that's running, will actually be a formidable candidate against him. His problem is going to be everything else that's happening around him, and that's the senatorial races and the congressional races. If there's a pull down for John, it's not going to be the Republican candidate. It's going to be the swamp around him.
We should mention the other Republicans, Jack Kimble and Karen Testerman. There's also a Libertarian in the race, John Barbiars?
Babiars.
Oh, I'll get to mispronounce every candidate's name here in this state. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. Kevin's calling from Manchester.
Good afternoon. I called to make a point originally that Arnie just made, that Bill Binney's known because he has the money to be known. But I really want to point out that the GOP, I mean, there's a race to the right that is just alarming. They're really pandering to this Tea Party movement. Kelly Ayotte has always been a pragmatist. She's somebody that Democrats have been able to get behind in the past. I don't recognize her. It seems as though there is a tremendous race to the right with the Obama bashing, and they're trying to ride that into the Senate. And I'm hopeful that Paul Hodes is able to get his message out clearly once the Republicans square away who they're going to put forward.
Ken, this was the point you were making with Kelly Ayotte earlier, that in a lot of races around the country, the influence of the Tea Party and conservatives in this year's primaries have pulled all the candidates to the right.
Right. I'm not sure, as Kelly Ayotte said, I'm not sure if she's moved further to the right because of it, or she denies doing that. But I don't know how the Democrats have rallied behind her in the past if she's never run for office before.
Well, no, she's never run for office. She was renominated to serve as Attorney General by Democratic Governor John Lynch twice, actually.
Was she identified as a Republican?
Not really. Sort of an independent. And people didn't really know where she stood on a lot of issues. I mean, as Attorney General, it's a, you know, nonpartisan job here. She did do some things. She, you know, appealed a parental notice law on abortion that was struck down, you know, mm-hmm. to the U.S. Supreme Court which the Democratic leadership and the governor did not support that decision. She went ahead and did it. She, was pretty butch on the death penalty and pushed forth the only conviction where there's a guy who's shot a policeman who's,
But Jean Shaheen and John Lynch, two Democrats of outstanding reputation, are both very pro-death penalty. So it's not necessarily a partisan issue.
Let me ask Kevin, you still on the line? You say you don't recognize Kelly Ayotte. How has she changed?
She's always been a pragmatist. She's always been about solutions. When I see her advertisements now, she's making a big point about deficit spending and how she wants to do what all dyed-in-the-wool Republicans want to do, which is lower taxes and pay down the debt. It didn't work under Reagan. It's not going to work now. And it's a simple answer to a complex question. I'd really like to ask her what common sense spending she's talking about.
She's leftist as well.
When we had the economic crisis of late 2008, would she just vote no? Bailed out GM? Would she have let those tens of thousands of jobs?
All right, Kevin, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Well, she has run into some criticism in that when she was Attorney General, she was the eager recipient of money from the stimulus bill and deployed that money, and never did she criticize that. And they set up a cold case unit at the Attorney General's office for some of the funding. And now she says, well, I was in a different role then. Now, if I had been there, I would have voted against it because I think it's wasteful.
But there is another – the reason I started the discussion by talking about the number of independents, or in this case undeclareds in New Hampshire, undeclareds can pick up either ballot in the September primary. And the question then becomes, there's no reason to pick up a Democratic ballot. No offense. There's only one competitive race and it's not even really that competitive. But on the Republican side, there's such variety and such opportunity that if you are an undeclared and you still want to participate in politics, you're going to pick up a Republican ballot. I'm looking at the candidates in the first, second, congressional district as well as the Senate, and trying to figure out who's going to appeal to them. And Kelly Ayotte is between a rock and a hard place. If she is the anointed from Washington, then she has to sort of sound lockstep. But if she is a little more independent, she could frame a message, given the fact she was appointed by a Republican, appointed by a Democrat. She really is that bridge to somewhere, and hopefully maybe even be able to make an appeal to those independents. The problem is she's made the assumption she has to tack so far to the right, and the question is, does she step on Ovid, who's also on the right, and Binney, who can spend so much money, he can be right, left, and middle because he can afford to do it.
Well, the answer is that September 14th comes before November 2nd.
Exactly. I know.
Well, let's get Steve on the line. Steve calling from Portsmouth in New Hampshire.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I guess I'm one of those undeclareds, and I'll be voting in the Republican primary, but I just want to comment on something that some people think that the state's changed to a blue state or a purple state. I'm not sure, but I know a lot of independents, and in 06, there was a move against the Bush administration because they didn't exhibit much in terms of fiscal responsibility. On the local side, the previous governor had some ethical issues. So I think there's a wholesale kind of change because people wanted to kick the bums out. And now I know most independents, the core, one thing we have in common is a sense of fiscal responsibility. And I think that's just going to make a huge difference in this upcoming election, because I don't think there's any evidence of any fiscal responsibility right now in Washington. And nor is it on the state side either. We're running deficits in the state. And I think you're going to see a lot of independents say, you know what, the most important issue for me is the budget deficit and is fiscal responsibility. And they're going to go in that direction.
And if there was one candidate you say that you would believe would exhibit fiscal responsibility, who would that be?
It'd be either Kelly Ayotte or Bill Binney.
Okay. Steve, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking New Hampshire politics today on Political Junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me reintroduce our guests. They are Arnie Arneson, a regular guest on Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa, but she lives here in Concord, New Hampshire. And she's also with Callie Crossley on the radio on GBH in Boston. And, of course, Political Junkie Ken Rudin is just there filling in for me, my thoughts and my brain spasms. And also with us is Josh Rogers, New Hampshire Public Radio's State House reporter. We've been talking about the House. We talked about the Senate and the gubernatorial race. There are, as we mentioned, two House races. Paul Hoad's district, he, of course, is running for the Senate on the Democratic side. There is a race for the Democratic nomination here.
There is a race between Annie McLean Custer and Oh, my goodness.
Katrina Sweat.
I apologize. Katrina. Katrina has run before. Her husband was the former congressman. Annie has never run before for office, but Annie has been running probably since she was in utero. And what do I mean by that is her mother was a very famous moderate Republican.
Susan McLean is
Annie McLean's mother, and she was very, very active with her mother on so many levels. She was one of the first women to run for Congress as a Republican, and Malcolm was the mayor. So she's come from a very, very, very involved and engaged political family, formerly moderate Republicans. They left the Republican Party and became Democrats. It's going to be a very, very interesting race. Katrina is a very, very savvy politician.
She's a hurricane.
But her liability is interesting, and that is that she was very involved with Lieberman's campaign. And one of the interesting things is I went to her bio, and it's not even mentioned on her bio. So she knows it's a tough sell on Democrats in a primary. So it's going to be a very, very fascinating race between Annie McLean Custer and Katrina Sweat.
Well, the Republican side in that race is also interesting because Charlie Bass is trying to reclaim a seat he was in for six terms, and he faces Jennifer Horn, who was the nominee last time around, and Bob Guida, former state lawmaker. And they're both fairly conservative. And, you know, Charlie's been running kind of a below-the-radar campaign. He's poked his head out briefly to say that I love the Tea Party. God bless every one of them. Their views are my views. And
that was not Charlie Bass in the old days. Charlie Bass was kind of a moderate conservative.
You got it, honey.
Yeah. Well, he's part of the Main Street Republicans and, very much, perceived to be a moderate. And he made that noise and it sort of quieted down a bit on that score. But it'll be interesting to see. There's a question about, GOP primary voters. Do they want to elect a guy that had been in for so long and is associated with some of the fiscal issues under Bush that they find distasteful.
Carol Shea Porter running unchallenged for the congressional nomination in the first district again, more on the Republican side, three candidates.
Well, I think it's really kind of fun on that side because you have a candidate for everyone. You have the Greg candidate, Rick Ashew. You have the Sununu candidate, and that's Sean Mahoney. And then you have the former mayor of Manchester, Mr. Ginta, who is kind of the working man's conservative. And there's an article in the Washington Post today that just said that he was endorsed by the Family Research Council, which everybody was surprised by because he was sort of libertarian. But the Family Research Council assured us that he has evolved on the issues. So that should give you a sense of what's happening in the first district. But, it'll be fabulous.
But there are a lot of Republican candidates running. Governor, Senator, Congress show some kind of Republican enthusiasm here.
Oh, tremendous enthusiasm. They have a pulse. I think the biggest mistakes that the Democrats did was make sure there was no contest. There was no competition. I think primaries matter, not just about who wins, but getting people engaged and enthused. Paul Hose is going to have a difficult time even getting any kind of press because he's not the story until after September 14th, and that's very late.
And there's not a long time between September 14th and Election Day. Looking ahead to November, as we mentioned, a couple of the Republicans, at least in the Senate side, seem to have advantages over Paul Hose. And, we were mentioning that John Lynch, the Democratic incumbent, might be his race to lose. Anyway, thanks to you both, Arnie Arneson and Josh Rogers. Ken Rudin joined us here in Concord, New Hampshire. And a special thanks today to the folks at New Hampshire Public Radio. That's Andrew Perella, Nathan Chervek, Dan Colgan, Abby Goldstein, and Becky Cates. Tomorrow, the challenges of being openly gay in a public high school, plus why soccer will never bring peace to the Middle East. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Concord, New Hampshire. And take over this beautiful land.